Hi, I'm Michael Bunting, and I'm here with Charlotta Tharup. And this is an audio series on mindful eating. And Charlotta is an expert on mindfulness and mindful eating. Charlotta, just for our listeners, could you give us a brief history and introduction of your experience with mindfulness and mindful eating?
Sure. Thank you for being curious about this. I'm passionate about this. And I think the first stat I heard around this was that 85% of Swedish women had a relentless inner turmoil around what they should eat and not eat and how they didn't like their body. And that resonated with me. So going back a few years, I've been doing mindfulness probably for about 10, 15 years now. And the mindful eating came about as at the end of a program I ran within Defence, where a woman said after the 9 weeks, "I just want to tell you what's it done to me." And she said, "First of all, you would have noticed that I have had this movement with my arm." Her arm would sort of move across her body. "I've had this since I was 7, and I'm no longer doing it. I never realized it was anxiety." She said, "When I'm lying in front of the TV at night and I want to go and get some chocolate, I can shift attention to the body. I can notice that urge and I notice that disappears quickly. So I'm eating less. So I've lost 4 kilos. And that was really the aha for me. And the final thing that she shared was to say, "You know, normally I'm so anxious at work. I'm part of a team of five. Last Friday, I walked into work. I was the only one of my team there. And normally," she said, "I would run to the supervisor all the time, being very, very unsure of what to do. This time I just knew I needed to keep my prefrontal cortex engaged, focus on what had to be done. And then I just did that. I felt no anxiety. I left at 5, knowing that I hadn't done everything that was possibly could be done, but I had done all that I could do." And it was really her insights that inspired me to go, wow, there's a whole world around the eating and our relationship with food. And I had an eating disorder when I was younger. And still, even though I no longer binged, I no longer starved, I still had the traces of it. You know, if there was a big occasion coming up, I would make sure that I wanted to have a flat stomach for the occasion. And I was kind of always either putting on a little bit of weight or losing weight. I never found that happy, okay, this is it. And I think I'm not alone in that. I think many actually have that kind of swing. So that swinging is also full of usually a lot of shame, feeling that I'm out of control. I'm surely the only one who might have a bag of chips and 2 Magnums at night. and then once you start sharing that, you go, no, that's actually not that uncommon. Perhaps not the Magnum, something else. But that binging that often leads to a lot of self-loathing and also thinking that, you know, there's kind of a very undignified part in that. So lots of shame comes from that. And I was also curious about it in the space of shame and women's identification with their bodies in relation to mindful leadership for women, thinking that I'm quite sure there's a correlation that between women putting their hand up or not putting their hand up and body image. You know, if I feel really that I'm not good enough, then I'm not going to put my hand up. And I'd had a woman on a retreat who said to me, "You know, I'm a success in every way. I've got money enough. I'm good at my job. I've got a good husband, a good family. But look at me. I'm fat. And that means actually I'm a failure." And it's very sad, right? So that was sort of the context. I then, because I had trained already, I was working with mindfulness, went on and trained in mindful eating. So there's an international body on that. I trained in Belgium with a group of very enthusiastic European women, which is great. And we're still sort of part of a network. And then I also realized that program was very targeted at American women, not so much the women that I was targeting, which was more that not necessarily being obese, but just having that endless internal turmoil around my relationship with the body and eating and weight. So increasingly, I started to see that relationship as a microcosm for my whole relationship with life and thinking, wow, this is exciting. So we did pilot study after pilot study. And I would simply sit and say, you know, give exercises and then we'll discuss. And we learned from that, integrating the program. Eventually, we came up with a program that's called Dear Body. And that's the program that the book represents and also that our online program and the retreats all follow now. It's a very integrated program. So every element of the program kind of dovetails and feeds and supports the other. We've researched it and we've found that apart from the basics around mindful eating, decreasing the food cravings and reducing dichotomous black-white thinking, which of course is part of the diet binge cycle, and reducing body image concerns and emotional eating, and of course weight and depression and perceived stress. In our particular programs, we had some additional elements, which was really interesting. And one of them is kind of easily illustrated by a woman who said to me, "You know what, Charlotte, I've noticed that I cannot walk into a shopping center with my little basket and saying, dear body, what do you need? And put rubbish in the basket. It doesn't work." Mm. Right? So that whole dear body really changes the relationship we have with the body.
Can you just talk a little bit more about dear, because you're just mentioning dear body.
And yeah.
I know that our listeners probably have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. So, you know, actually there's a really powerful story around how that came about. Mm. And it was, I was working with a group of people. I had seen them on a certain occasion and this young man, he was 36, he was fine. And then I saw him 2 months later where he had drug-induced Parkinson's. He was sitting there, his leg, the whole body was shaking. He has actually, he'd been admitted for depression. He'd been in a psych ward for the time. And I was supposed to interview him for a big sort of conflict resolution situation. And his whole body is shattering, is shaking. And I said to him, just close the eyes and let's just be with his body first. Let's notice where the shivering starts. Let's just honor that it's there, acknowledge that it's there. And then we started just kind of, you know, these voices just came up and say, just say, dear body, I'm listening. I hear your language. With that, he started to weep because it was that deep connection. And within a few minutes, the body started to relax. And when the body was relaxed, we could start to interview him. So it actually came spontaneously out of that situation, that beautiful intimate statement of, dear body, I'm listening, I hear your language, being a connecting and acknowledging and an appreciation of the body. Because we also realized that you it's easy to abuse what you're disconnected from, but you protect what you fall in love with.
It's so beautiful hearing that. And as a male, you've talked a lot about the female relationship with the body, but I know for me as a man, I also have that same thing with weight. I think we have the same journey with weight.
Yeah,
you know. But I think also we can treat our bodies. We could be fit and in good shape, but have a very destructive relationship with our body, where it's almost ignoring it. And when you say that word, dear body, and then the grieving, and you know, I know for myself, and I know any good transformational practice will eventually bring us face to face with our grief, and then that the softening and reconnecting. It's just so beautiful hearing that, that bringing our relationship to our body, this precious thing we live in, with kindness and connectedness, and it makes so much sense that there was grief in him in the example. And I imagine for everyone listening to this.
Yeah, that's right. Because we realize, I mean, one of the exercises we do in the program is you write a letter to your body and then a letter back. Mm. And there's always a lot of tears involved in that, right?
Mm.
Because we realize how we often are disconnected completely. You know, we think, oh, now it needs the nails done. Now it's put on weight. Now it's not doing this. Oh, now it's got a sore leg. Now it's doing this. And we're disconnected from the amazing organism that it is.
Mm.
So that's one of the first things we really look at. In the program is connecting in a different way with the body. So that's
and
one of the things.
When you say a different way, can you talk a little bit more about what is that different way?
So that is shifting from the abusive relationship we tend to have where we eat for the sake of looking in a certain way and we exercise for the sake of looking in a certain way rather than listening to what the body needs and honoring the body's needs. So we shift from what we call outside eyes to inside eyes. And we'll explore that a little bit more in detail in the next session.
So I'm assuming this, and I can see now this is way bigger than mindful eating.
Yes, it is.
This is the entire relationship with our body.
Yeah, which of course then leads us into our relationship with life.
Beautiful.
Right.
Mm.
We also found, particularly to our program, was that mindful eating means increase in mindfulness practice, so better results overall in terms of the benefits of mindfulness, in terms of reducing stress, feeling more grateful was also something that came out. We immediately, and I loved this, we found that people were saying the weight loss became a side effect. They came to the program because they wanted to adjust their weight. But immediately I was receiving emails the first times we ran it where people saying, you know, I feel much better, I'm happier, I'm calmer. Oh, by the way, I've lost 10 kilos. Oh, by the way, I've lost 2 kilos. Oh, by the way, I've gained 5. That was the case, right? But it became a side effect. And that's what we wanted, right? Because it was helping the body come into harmony, into health, and then through that, stabilizing the weight.
I'm just listening. I don't know how the listeners are feeling, but I'm just listening to this and going, wow. There's so much in that, our relationship with our bodies in our culture.
Hugely.
It's insane, the relationship we have, the airbrushed pictures of women.
That's right, exactly.
The fake expectations, the pressure.
Yes. And yet, in spite of that, of course, our relationship with food is turned into an individual problem. Right? Everyone thinks it's just me. I can't manage my chocolate intake.
Yeah. Right?
And with that comes great shame. Versus knowing it as, you know, there are so many elements to this. You know, it's an infrastructure issue. It's a political issue. It's a marketing. It's a commercial issue. It's so many things, right? I mean, in Denmark, for instance, where 43% of the population ride their bicycles to work, you don't have the same amount of obese people, right? Well, we don't have the bicycle paths here. We don't have the cities being structured in a way where we can ride our bikes, right? So it's much bigger than just me. It's also, you know, we have no laws protecting shameless marketing of food and unhealthy food and lots of lies on the packaging, so that, you know, it's kind of no way for us to work it out any other way than coming into the body. You know, most of the information we have about food is actually not by neutral people, but people have an agenda, right? That's a problem. So what we then, in terms of what we see the program as being, is about eating with intention, attention, and lots of curiosity, lots of kind curiosity, so that that relationship becomes an entry point for our mindfulness practice, for growing up and waking up, if you like. We also realized from the pilot studies, and I suppose from my lots of experience with mindfulness, that there were kind of the six practices that it all fell into. And the first one is about attention training, and that's what we'll explore right now. Then came the relationship with the body. Then came reducing stress and anxiety. And there's so much powerful research around how difficult it is to manage and change our habits when we're stressed, and also what hormones do to our bodies beyond calorie equation. Then taking in the beautiful voices, aspects of life, gratitude, joy, compassion, and knowing and noticing that when we are full of those, we no longer yearn to eat food that the body doesn't need. And then finally, then mindfulness of feeling, which is all about noticing when it's the feelings that take us either there for soothing something, getting rid of, avoiding something, or celebrating. You know, when are the feelings directing us to food? And then finally, we're looking at where we're integrating transaction analysis with mindfulness in terms of looking at the diet binge cycle being the dance between the parent and the child, and the missing part being the adult. So in effect, you can see they all dovetail in the whole way through. We're sponsoring and empowering the adult with us to make sane choices and to be curious and kind as we're riding through.
I can really connect with that last piece, you know, the child, inner child in me who wants to eat rebelliously, bugger it. And then the judge that comes in and says, you shouldn't have done that. And now the inner child's back in distress, so I'll go and eat again.
That's right.
I can really, that cycle, you know, I've worked with that in myself. It's just an amazing, it's an inescapable almost.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I almost think, I'm sort of curious about, is that almost like a brain pattern functioning in itself? I'd be quite interested to see the research because everybody knows it.
Yeah.
That's the experience. So
Yeah, we even say, I mean, we even have it in our language, oh, I'm going to be naughty.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I'm going to eat X.
Yes, that's right. Yes, or I'm going to be good. As yes. if not eating a cake can make you good. I mean, yeah. it's kind of crazy stuff, yeah. right?
yeah.
You know, yeah, it's so loaded. Mm. And also, you know, we explore things like, you know, what were the messages you got as a child around eating? Mm. What do you think your body says about you? When you're walking there, what do you think it says about you? And, you know, in some of the groups that I run, it brings us all to tears when you really hear that, because you hear things like, I'm pathetic, I'm weak-willed, I'm lazy, I'm stupid, you know, based in the size of the body. Right? And imagine walking around with that. No wonder you then eat to escape the pain of that. And there we are. So the key thing is, I suppose, that, you know, this is much bigger than an individual issue. However, you know, unless you want to go into politics and change the world, it's not your fault that it is so, but it's kind of your responsibility. To have a good life, you need a healthy body and you need to honor the body. So that's where we start. So we start in the first practice is really called the mindful way, and it's awareness and attention. And we're just curious about what's going on. What is mindfulness? How does it work? What is mindful eating? How does the neuroscience fit into it? And we also look at multitasking. Of course, there's very, very powerful research that says that when we multitask, when we eat a lot more because we're eating disconnected from the body, I suppose is the key thing there. And then we have mindfulness exercises, audios for each of the practices.
Wonderful. I mean, just for the listener, if you're wanting to get a hold of this and you're going, whoa, I want to do more of this, because we're going to do a few more of these that will live in my app and my website, but you know, some people may want to go and do a whole lot more. Where can they go and do more?
If they just go to the mindfulness clinic, and then there's an online program, we run retreats, there's the book, there's Great. Lots of resources to explore this further.
Great, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We always set the tone, and I have this beautiful sort of quote by Jack Kornfield around how we hold ourselves in this space. So we're starting with the dear body. And then here's the quote. I used to think that to become free, you had to practice like a samurai warrior. But now I understand that you have to practice like a devoted mother of a newborn child. It takes the same energy but has a completely different quality. It's compassion and presence rather than having to defeat the enemy in a battle. So holding yourself in that kind, nurturing exploration of the issue is really essential. So kind curiosity rather than not good enough, more shame, and more guilt. Etc.
So how would I imagine if I'm sitting here and I'm listening to this and I've got an uncomfortable relationship with my body and I'm starting to feel guilt and I'm even wanting to turn this audio off because I'm not really enjoying listening to this.
It's too much.
Yeah. What advice would you give me right now?
Tune into the body. Just listen to the body, and even just saying, dear body, I'm listening and I hear your language.
Do you think
take a moment to, for instance, write a little letter of appreciation to your body. Think of what your body has done for you. Think about what your hands, look at your hands for a moment and think about what have they held? What have they caressed? What have they done? These amazing hands. Think of all that have come through these hands, if you like. Think of your feet and your legs, all the places they have taken you to, all the pavements, all the paths they have stepped on. Right? Think of the dear heart, all the beats, whether you think about it or not, it's just pumping away, pumping away, pumping away. The whole system working all the time, whether you're aware of it or not, working, 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 and always being on the lookout for you, always wanting you to survive. It's doing the best it can. So from that honoring place, it's much easier to choose healthy food. To say, oh, dear body, I can feel you need to walk. So rather than walking and doing exercise because I want the body to look in a certain way, I'm doing it because the body needs it and I'm honoring the body. Rather than, you know, eating because, you know, not eating chips because I think they're bad for me. I don't eat them because the body doesn't really enjoy them. Mm. And it gives you the body that horrible feeling afterwards. Mm. They're toxic. They're plastic. They're not good for me.
Mm. Thank you.
So that's a starting place.
Mm.
We also, of course, start by really looking at what mindfulness is, that ongoing practice of noticing our experience, noticing our inclinations, getting to know the mind, so that gradually we shifted to being not so much a source of suffering, but really a source of and a tool for a good life. Mm. The practice, the ongoing practice, and that there's no escape from the practice. We can't read ourselves. You can't just listen to this and go, yaha, I'm done. Unfortunately, you have to practice, and it doesn't come overnight. Mm. You know, I had a photo sent from a woman who did the retreat 2 years ago, and she's lost now 42 kilos. She's also divorced her husband. I suppose that's a few kilos extra. She's got a new job, and she's just on fire. She's just loving her life, right?
Yeah.
But it's taken 2 years to lose 40 kilos. Mm. But she made a lot of changes already after a month. She also had some major trauma that was released as part of that journey.
That's the interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, weight and trauma.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit? I know maybe I'm sidetracking you too much, but it's something I'm very curious about, is eating away our trauma or trying to bury our feelings and what invariably must come up. You must see a lot of this when the weight starts coming off, especially if you're doing it mindfully. There must be some pretty big experiences and trauma and very difficult feelings that come for people.
Yeah. So with this particular woman, her mother had died when she was 14. And we did some trauma work, some deep work in healing the heart that she described when we did the body part was being ripped apart at that time.
Mm.
And, of course, at that time she had obviously concluded pretty much stuff it all. I'm not safe in this world. I'm just going to have a good time. Mm. So she ate, she drank, she did whatever she could. There were no boundaries. She was the child, if you like.
Mm.
And once we did the trauma healing, she was free to then choose a much more adult way and take responsibility.
It's a beautiful example of what you said. It's an inside-out approach, isn't it? It's
always.
It's not, because I always wonder sometimes when you see these programs like The Biggest Loser and all of that, and you know, they lose all this weight, but I sometimes wonder, wow, I wonder how they're coping with all the trauma, and if they've been given the tools and how long they'll last, and all the weight will get packed on again, because they're not really.
And it does, of course, because diets don't work.
Yeah.
Categorically, they don't work. The most powerful predictor of being overweight is that you've been on a diet, right? So the key thing is it gets you into dichotomous thinking, binge or you know, being good or bad, if you like.
Right? Yeah.
And it doesn't get to the root cause. This is all about getting to the root cause of it. Getting to the root cause of your dysfunction, if you like, your dysfunction, your need to eat, to soothe, or whatever is taking you to the food, or to tune out, or whatever you're doing.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, this is a very important, and it's a point I'm very, very passionate about, is, and I often use this as an analogy of what I call the three layers of a cake, to use an analogy of eating, but yes. I sometimes liken it, and I talk about this in some of my programs, about that when we practice, when we see certain behaviors at the first layer, they're an analogy for the layers of the psyche, and the first layer is our ordinary behaviors, and it might be, to use this example, I'm overeating is a classic behavior in the first level. And then when you usually ask people, well, why do you do this, they usually come up with a kind of flat, this is just me, I love food, is the classic one.
And then
the second layer of the cake is what I call the layer of pain, and it's the unresolved issues in us that we're doing the first layer to try and resolve. So we're eating to maybe try and resolve some feeling of loneliness or emptiness, for example. And then, and this is classic mindfulness practice, transformational mindfulness practice, the third layer of the cake is freedom. But the only way we get to the third layer of freedom is by deeply embracing the second layer. And there's no other way. Like, this is mindfulness, we know it's growing rapidly, but it's, you know, the real practice of mindfulness is not a fad. It takes a lot of courage and the right skills and resources, because you have to face that layer of pain if you want true freedom.
Yes.
Not just to keep cycling in the binge at level one. And this ties beautifully in with that.
Absolutely. The beauty is, I think, that when you hold your pain, particularly in a community of a group, or you just hold it in the body, it's not so bad. Yeah. It's more the fear of the pain. Mm. That's kind of the worst. Once you get through the fear of the pain, there's just pain, which very quickly turns into a warm compassion.
Yes.
Right. So we're kind of afraid of a delusion.
Yes.
So one of the things that we very, very typically see as a cause of a kind of a trauma causing a lot of extra eating is the child that, or the woman who, or the man who is raised in a household where they have very early learnt that I need to make sure that everyone's not fighting here or everyone's happy here, otherwise I'm not safe.
Mm.
So we call that, of course, the compliant child. In that, there's an abdication of my own needs. When I am not aware of what I need, I'm also not aware of what's going on for me. So many describe it as I have a black hole. And so I go to work and I come back and I've been so focused in a way my locus of control is always out here. Mm-hmm. And then I just need to fill my black hole. And I do that with food.
Yeah.
So that's a very, very typical one. Mm.
And it's always, in some of my other tracks and audio tracks, I talk about the numbing. And it's just another way, isn't it? Another way to fill, hole filling. Elmas, the famous psychologist, calls it the hole. And we try and fill our holes, but the hole's unfillable, the only way to
resolve the holes. Yeah, and food is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, tuning into ourselves. Immediately when we do Dear Body, I'm Listening, there's a filling of the hole that's much more sustaining than another magnum or bag of chips.
So another way of looking at this, I love Pema Chodron's way of teaching this, is that this mindfulness is the teaching of no escape. It's going in, not away from. And this is, again, a reminder for my listeners that we always, 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 the same principle with mindfulness is we move toward and connect with.
We face. The healing of the pain is the pain.
Yes.
That is the big motto.
Yes.
Always, whether that physical, emotional, or spiritual.
Yeah. And this is just a beautiful way of another way of working with, and a very important way of working with our mindfulness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
So I suppose the big thing is through the program, we're shifting from reactivity to responsiveness, to choosing. Another way of saying that, we're stepping into becoming the adult around our choices, which doesn't mean perfection at all, but at least it's more reflection. And gradually we start to change the habits because we're changing from the inside, as you're saying.
Mm.
Another way, again, of saying that is we kind of come into choicefulness. So rather than saying I mustn't have, I should have, I go, I'm going to have a biscuit. I'm going to really enjoy it.
Mm.
And it's enough with one or not. It's okay. But I can choose. Another way of saying choose is I have freedom, right? It's no longer running me, but I'm running the show and I'm tuning in to where my needs are. And I'm not judging myself based in that. And I don't feel I have to finish the whole packet because I've opened it, right? So, of course, mindfulness wouldn't work if it weren't for neuroplasticity. So we're constantly our brain is constantly changing through what we pay attention to. And there's such a beautiful story that illustrates this, which was one that I heard a couple of years ago. It was a guy who was out from the US and he was saying that he was visiting his mother while he was writing a chapter about gratitude. And his mother he described as an 89-year-old Jewish woman always whinging and complaining. His words, not mine. And he said to her, Mum, this gratitude is amazing. Do you know it makes you healthier, it makes you happier? It's just fantastic. And she said, well, it's just a shame it's too late for me. And then he said, well, what if it wasn't? Would you give it a go? And she said, all right, you tell me what to do and we'll do it. He said, what we're going to do is every time you whinge and complain, I'm going to say, and? And then you have to say, and I have a blessed life. He said, we have never laughed more than that week because all I could do is go, and. After a week, he left, the neighbor took over. So she kept going, and. And after 5 weeks, his sister rang and said, what have you done to Mum? She's changing. 2.5 years later, she's dying. She's lying in hospital and he walks in and he can see her looking very peaceful in the corner. And he just sits there next to her looking at her. And when she comes to, he says, Mum, I'm wondering what you were thinking. You looked so peaceful. And she says, nothing, darling, only the occasional blessed, blessed, blessed. And so that's neuroplasticity in action. She was 89 when she started. So wherever you're at, it's never too late, right? Mm. And what happened was, of course, that the neurons that we train fire clearer and stronger signals. So the networks that she had trained up till she was 89 were all about misery and what wasn't right. Then she started training the brain for blessed. And even on her deathbed, that is what came to the forefront of her experience. Mm. So mindfulness is a changing of our brain using our attention, and she had a bit of help to change that. So we start to see the world in a different way, because you can appreciate how different the world would have been before she started this till at the end. So that also means you can shift the whole relationship that you have with your body and food. It doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen through what you pay attention to.
So Charlotta, I wonder if you could summarize for us what we've been, you know, this particular audio, and leave us with a couple of key tips, like some things we could actually go and have a go at right now.
Yeah, sure. So mindful eating in my case is about dear body. That's really where it starts, changing our relationship we have with the body, tuning into the body, noticing the body, and starting to listen to its needs. We do that through a gradual process of calling it dear body. And we just, at the last part, looked at neuroplasticity and knowing that this is not a sort of a quick fix. This is a gradual process of changing.
Mm. Can you tell me exactly how, like if I was new to this practice and just generally of mindfulness, when you say dear body and we tune into the body and be like, well, what exactly do you do to do that?
Right, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, one little thing that you can do, for instance, is when you have a shower and you're putting soap on your hands and you're going over your body with the hands, you can just say, dear body. And what you might notice is you might notice some resistance. You might go, no, it's not. not these bits, which is often, I go, oh, that's interesting. Can I just keep doing with going, dear body, and feel the dear body, right? Mm. Because when you feel the love for the body, you're changing the physiology of the body. Right? That's the first thing we want to do. We want to change the way you relate to it. Because as we say, it's easy to abuse what you're disconnected from. Mm. You protect, you love, you protect what you fall in love with. We're looking at that, loving the body.
So when you say dear body, we're trying to say body. Like, dear body, I love you, dear body, I love you, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then there's going to be resistance, but just keep going.
Yeah, just keep going, noticing that resistance. Yeah. And then just say, yeah, but... You know, coming into, for instance, as we just talked about, some of the wonderful ways that this body serves you, and appreciate those.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Another way is to simply.
Sorry to interrupt, but could you say something as simple as "thank you, body, for"?
Absolutely.
Just as a technique.
Yes.
So,
okay, dear body, thank you so much for this day, for being pain free.
Yeah.
Or for, you know, stretching so far, for giving that wonderful hug, or for cooking that meal, or for, you know, holding that thing or whatever.
Mm.
Right.
For still being around.
Yes, exactly. For coping with me.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's that. It's really just tuning in. And then, of course, it's just being curious around your eating habits. Just be curious, kindly curious. So when you've eaten something that you didn't really need, be curious about what made that okay? How did you justify? What brought you to it? Were you in a rush? Were you desperately hungry? Initially, we're just curious, because that's the opposite of all the judgment.
Mm. So for me, probably my worst habit is ice cream.
Okay.
And at the end of each day, depends, you know, if I'm curious about it, and I'll try and practice it right now for the sake of myself and our listeners, I notice that when I'm exhausted and the workload gets intense, my sugar intake goes higher.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if I was to try and mirror what you're doing now, I'd say, okay, so I've just eaten some ice cream, right? There's that familiar feeling of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
There's that familiar, my stomach's not feeling so great as well, because it's got a cold feeling.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a kind of almost rebellious kind of,
I deserve it. I've worked so hard. It's my reward.
I've been working late. So what we're saying, I guess, is to notice those things that are going on, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just that. Yeah, that's enough. Because exactly. If I now go, well, then I shouldn't eat ice cream. I'm not really okay.
We're not doing anything like that for the first weeks of the program. Nothing.
Yeah.
Because just that just noticing. Strengthens your dichotomous thinking. We don't want that. We just want you to be kindly curious, just to notice what's going on.
Okay. So I can eventually get a real sense of when I eat ice cream, this is what happens. This is what's going on.
Exactly.
These are my justifications. And I may continue to be eating ice cream or not. Just let it flow. Just be curious as to what's happening. Like you're on a little investigation trip of like, what actually is going
on
here?
That's exactly what we say. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're your own little detective. What is going on with this little system called me?
Yeah. And it's just to keep it really clear, because I've got this sort of trying to be technically precise as I can with my practice. It sounds like when we're asking the question, what's going on, one aspect is feeling what's happening in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a part of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of what's going on is noticing the sort of coming up to the eating and what happens after the eating. So the mind habits,
mm-hmm.
the contextual mm-hmm. habit of my life, what's
That's
going
right.
on there.
Yep.
So we've got what's going on there, and then probably also the thought patterns
that justify.
My justify and judging around. So those.
Yep.
So if you try and summarize, it's sort of almost three elements. It's the
and
context.
One more, actually.
Yes.
And that is... is it much more likely after a very big day? Have I just had a difficult conversation?
Yes.
Am I trying to avoid a difficult conversation? So there's also the practical level,
yeah.
right? Because there's no doubt the more stressed we are, the more we seek solace, comfort in the ice cream.
So context, thinking and judging around it, and the body. What's going on in these three areas, and beginning to learn with kindness and a sense of almost, as I'm smiling as I'm saying this, kind of like, oh yeah, okay, that's what happens.
Yes,
get it.
That's right.
Okay.
And with the smile, there's kind of there's a sweetness to that, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, there's no judging, going, oh, I'm just another little human on my little journey.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is sweet.
Yes, great. And then is there any one thing that can help me progress just beyond the curiosity at this point? Or would you say just go and practice the curiosity at this point?
Right. Well, I'd very much suggest two practices. One is not multitasking when you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
So that is put a mouthful of food in your mouth and simply focus on that rather than busying yourself putting more food on the utensils.
Great.
And then don't do that till you've finished the food in your mouth, okay? You will notice the food much, much more. It slows your eating down. And actually, for instance, you will notice that with the ice cream, a lot of the time you finished it and you've got, what happened to it?
Yes.
Right?
And now I want some more.
Because you kind of missed it. Exactly. Because you missed it. So what are we seeking? Yeah. We're seeking the experience.
Yeah.
Right? When you multitask when you're eating, you miss the experience.
Yes.
So again, you can think about that in the big picture of things, right? But that's a really...
Excellent. So just to because I'll keep on re-summarizing three things.
Yeah.
Coming into loving relationship with our body, which is either a function of the dear body and noticing it. And then it could even be the thank you body for practice. And then there's the getting curious when we eat things that we know are not that great for us. Context, body and thoughts around that. And then the last one is what you've just been talking about now. Not multitasking when we eat. That's excellent.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a
enough,
lot to
right?
work with.
Yeah. Good.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.